All right, folks, as we pick up this week, we're going to start the book of Esther. What a wonderful book it is, the book of Esther. Actually, as we're starting the book of Esther, we are going to really pick up with the last two chapters of Daniel. You'll say, oh my, how does that fit in? Well, I want you to see how it fits in for the intro, because we finished Daniel last week. Daniel chapter 11 and 12. Daniel has gone to the king. His name is Darius the First, and he's all bothered. He's just become the king. He has taken over the kingship through really a overthrow of a false king that should not have taken the kingship, who reigned for about 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 months. In order for Darius, because he was just one of the satraps of the provinces of the previous king, the Persian king, in order for him to have the authority to actually be the king, he needed the bloodline. So he marries the daughter of Cyrus the Great in 522 BC, and he becomes the king. Well, it's 522 BC when he becomes the king, and he's bothered that Daniel goes in and he tells Darius the story of the vision that Daniel had had in chapter 10, 15 years before. Go back 15 years. So we're now in 522. Daniel tells the story in chapters 11 and 12 of the vision that he had had 15 years before. And Darius begins to reign for 35 years. He will die in 486 BC. Interesting things happen during this time. During this time, just 2 years later, Darius receives a request from the Sumerian people, not Samaritan yet, but Sumerians, those Gentile Assyrian people that were moved into the northern kingdom. They're called the cedars that have been planted in the kingdom, is what the way the Bible describes them. They are lofty, they are strong, and they're brought in there to take over, to really infiltrate the northern kingdom area that has very few Jews left in it because they've been all sent to exile. 90% of them died in the fall. The other 10% were really sent off into exile in Assyria, where they prospered because they were the ones who called upon the name of the Lord God, and so they were saved, the 10% that were saved, and they left a few behind that were married into the Sumerians, S-U-M-M, instead of Samaritan, S-A-R, the way we think about it, and they marry in the half-breed. Remember the Samaritan woman at the well? She was half Jew, half Assyrian, or Sumerian, okay? They've married in. Well, these Samaritans are really, really upset because they've started building the temple again. The year before, 522, they had sent a letter over to this false king who's taken over and said, hey, they're building. And they stopped the building. They stopped the building on the temple. Well, this letter now comes from the same group that they think the king's going to stop the temple building again. Lo and behold, he doesn't. Darius says, 520, let them continue rebuilding the temple. And listen, they were going to rebuild the temple no matter what, because in Haggai and in Zechariah and in Ezra, God said to them, you start that temple back right now. It doesn't matter what the king of Persia says. Well, they send the letter over. King of Persia says, yes, you keep that building going on. In fact, pay for it all out of the Persian treasury. So it continues on. The very next year, in 519, Darius and the daughter of Cyrus the Great have a boy, and they name him Xerxes. He is born. 515 BC, the temple is completed, dedicated, set back up. The sacrifices start. The whole Jewish process with the temple in Jerusalem just continues on now, starting in 515. 486 BC, Darius the First dies, and his son, Xerxes the First, becomes the king. He is 33 years old when he becomes the king. We come down 3 years, 483 BC, and that's where the story of Esther picks up. So let's look here. Chapter 1, verse 1 says, now it took place in the days of Ahasuerus, the Ahasuerus who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces. In those days, as King Ahasuerus sat on his royal throne, which was in Susa, the capital, in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his princesses and attendants, the army of officers of Persia and Media, the nobles and the princesses of his provinces being in his presence, and he displayed the riches of his royal glory and the splendor of his great majesty for many days, 180 days. Well, let's just kind of back up here and see what he's saying. You see the word Ahasuerus. You say, who in the world was Ahasuerus? You just told me it was Xerxes. All right, let me show you something. Go to the last two sentences in the intro. It says, the Persians call the king, and look at that Persian name, K-H-S-H-A-Y-A-R-A-S-A-H-A. That was his Persian name as king. The Greek name is Xerxes. The Hebrews took that Persian name, transliterated it, or what, made a Hebrew word out of it, and called him Ahasuerus. Now, after Xerxes is called Ahasuerus by the Hebrews hang on to that name Ahasuerus, and it doesn't matter if it's Xerxes or Artaxerxes, or Xerxes II, or Artaxerxes II, or Darius II, or Darius III, the Hebrews give him the title Ahasuerus, which was the name of Xerxes put into Hebrew. And the word means he's our president. If you were in Egypt, you'd say he's our pharaoh. If you were in America, you'd say he's our president. So the names, it's a title name. But it's a title name given to them by the Hebrews, not by the Persians. And so, if you'll see here, Xerxes is ruling, and he rules over 127 provinces. Well, that's seven more provinces than his dad, Darius I, ruled over 35 years before. And he's ruling, by the way, from the capital in Susa. Well, back in Daniel chapter 10, 15 years before Darius becomes the king, Daniel had that dream about that vision for his people. And even though Daniel was over in Babylon, in the city of Babylon, in his dream, he dreamed that he was over in what we would call Iran, or Persia at that point in time, but Iran, on a river at a place that would be called Susa or Shushan. Okay, either way, if you got an old 1800s King James, it doesn't say Susa, it says Shushan, all right? Daniel then, when Darius comes up 15 years later, tells him about his dream over in Susa. What does Darius do? Darius goes over to that place and he builds a city. Lo and behold, it will become the capital city. When Xerxes starts serving in 486, he moves the capital from Babylon to Susa. Susa is now going to be the capital for all the future Persian rulers because it's centrally located between India, and go over here to the other side, Ethiopia, Egypt, switch over on the other side of the north part of the Mediterranean Sea, and you've got Asia Minor and all that. All that belonged to the Persian Empire. And Susa was just about halfway in the middle, about 1,000 miles one direction and 1,000 miles the other direction. It was a huge area. Well, with that in mind, every other Persian leader will use Susa. Now, if it got really, really hot, real hot in the summers, then they would move the court to a place in Iran called Ecbatana. It's spelled a different way. Some people spell it E-C-B-A-T-A-N-A. Some people spell it Ecbatana, okay, Ecbatana. It's a place in Iran today called Hamadan. Iran is where it is today. That was the location for the summer court. Different than what the Babylonian kings used. These were the Persian kings. Okay. He's there. It's his third year. And he plans on having this big banquet. But before he does that, for 180 days or 6 months, he takes all the wealth that he controls and he puts it on display for all the people, the nobles and the princesses of the provinces and all the people to come and to look at and to watch and to see and to experience in an exhibit for 6 months. He's going to end the exhibit with a 7-day banquet. Well, here we go. Verse 5 says, "And when these days were completed," that's the 6 months, "the king gave a banquet lasting 7 days for all the people who were present in Susa, the capital, from the greatest to the least in the court of the king's palace." They're not even in the palace. They're outside in the court. Actually, they're in the garden of the palace. It has no roof on it. And so there they are in that court area, and they have it decorated beautifully. The book of Esther tells us about the decorations. Verse 6, "There were hangings of fine white and violet linen, held by cords of fine purple linen, on silver rings and marble columns. And they had couches of gold and silver on mosaic pavements of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl, and precious stones." Then the scripture goes on to tell us that the drinks were served in golden vessels of various kinds, and the royal wine was plentiful according to the king's bounty. And the drinking was done according to the law. There was no compulsion. For so the king had given orders to each official of his household that he should do according to the desire of each person. Let's explain what that means. First of all, here are these beautiful curtains that are hanging on these cords that are attached to silver rings, that are attached to the marble columns, that are on this absolutely gorgeous mosaic floor in the garden area where there's plenty of room for at least 127 princesses who serve in those provinces, plus the 7 princesses that are around his throne at all times. We'll see that in just a few minutes. Plus the other nobles and the other officials. They're out there in this gorgeous, gorgeous hanging place. I wish that Sagemont had a place like this. Just a gorgeous place. Just absolutely beautiful. Well, on top of that, these golden vessels for drinking the wine, which was plentiful. But it's very interesting. The king made a decree and a law that when all of his folks came in, they were able to do according to their own desires. If they were from Ethiopia, the feasting that they would do at the king's banquet, he wanted them to feast like they would have feasted in Ethiopia. If they were in Egypt, they were to feast like they feasted in Egypt. If they were from India, like the Indians feasted. As my wife would say, "Which Indians are those? Were they not the woo-woo Indians?" Isn't that cute? Woo-woo. Okay. Not those Indians. Different type of Indians. They came in their dress. We always think when we're thinking about this, oh, they were dressed in their long bathrobes like we dress up for Christmas pageants, right? We put our kids in bathrobes and send them out there with their Bibles and their staffs to be around the manger scene. That's how we do that. No, they were not dressed like biblical characters. If they came from, say, the northern part of the Asia Minor, the men are going to be dressed in very short white gowns or some color gowns with a gold belt or whatever, and their knees are showing, and it looks like they're wearing a dress. From Ethiopia, they're going to be dressed like Ethiopians. They didn't dress according to the Persian customs. They dressed according to the customs of the people wherever they lived. When it comes to the drinking of the wine, if it was their custom at a feast to just drink until you're drunk, have at it. If it's the custom for you to only sip a few sips, that's okay too. Whatever your custom was, that's what Xerxes wanted his people to celebrate at the festival. He did not want to cause them to all think they had to be different than what they were. They were to be the people of the cultures, to show all the cultures at this banquet time, for all the wealth of his kingdom was being shown. Well, in that meantime, after that, verse 9 says, Queen Vashti also gave a banquet for the women in the palace which belonged to King Ahasuerus. So not out on the beautiful mosaic tile with all the hanging curtains and everything, but inside the palace, Queen Vashti is throwing a banquet for the women. Well, now that causes us to ask a question. Why are the women inside and the men outside? Actually, I think the women probably would have loved the hanging curtains more than the men would, but that wasn't the pretty spot. So the men got the pretty spot because men were in charge. So Queen Vashti has all the women inside for the banquet. Why are the women inside and the men outside? Because it was the custom of the day of Persia and in almost every kingdom at that point in time that women never celebrated in a feast with the men. It was always men with men and women with women. That was the custom of the day. So she has the women inside the palace and they're forbid to go out and be with the men. Well, verse 10 says, on the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine. Well, you can tell right now he wasn't Baptist. Well, maybe he was Baptist on the other thought, okay? Merry with wine. Can I translate that to you in modern day English? He was drunker than a skunk. Okay? He commanded Mahuman, Biztha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagtha, they get a lot of Thuthar and Thuthar in here again, Zethar, Carcass, the seven eunuchs who served in the presence of the king Ahasuerus. These were the eunuchs who took care of the king's business. If the king needed something for his personal household, or he wanted one of the women out of his harem because he had a huge harem for the night, he would send one of these eunuchs to go get the woman. These eunuchs were in charge of the harems and everything else and whatever, the household staff and everything. These eunuchs were in charge. Sent these seven eunuchs to bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and the princes, for she was beautiful. Well, folks, her name wasn't really Vashti. If you look at the end of my note there, or mistress. Her common name was a mistress. That was her name. Why do we call her Vashti? Vashti in Persian means beautiful. She was so beautiful that her queen name, when she became the queen, just as Xerxes is not the common name of this king. He had another name too. Remember with the Ptolemies, it was Ptolemy Egrets, or his real name was Egrets, or the next one was a Sotar. Antiochus Epiphanes. Antiochus was his kingly name, his official name, but Epiphanes was his everyday name that he grew up with. Her everyday name was our mistress, but her official name was Vashti, probably given to her when he became king or even earlier because of her great beauty. He wanted her when he was drunker than a skunk. Can I say drunker than a skunk? Okay, let's get through that. He orders these seven guys, eunuchs, to go bring her in so that she can come in with her royal crown on to show off her incredible beauty. So, being a good queen, do you know what she says? It's in verse 12. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command delivered by the eunuchs. Then the king became very angry and his wrath burned within him. Just like most men, you get drunker than a skunk and you don't get your way, you get mad and throw a hissy fit. That's the way most of them happen. This is real Bible study, isn't it? Now, at face value, it doesn't look like this has got any problem whatsoever, does it? Well, she just disobeyed her husband. Why would coming and showing off her beauty have any problem with that? Number one, we got a problem. We're not sure what it is, but let's see if we can find out what that big problem is. Now, if you were a Jewish scholar, a rabbi, rabbis had this habit of interpreting the scripture for their people. They wrote little commentary snippets, or they would add a word here or there. And as they added these words and these phrases in the paragraph or whatever it is to explain what the scriptures really meant, And by the way, the one I'm fixing to tell you today was over 1,000 years after it was written, before a Jewish person stuck it in there. In the Jewish Targum, T-A-R-G-U-M, in that Jewish Targum that is held to by as being authoritative, but most of Christianity does not hold it to be authoritative, they add one word to it. The phrase, one word, it's going to surprise you. Some of you may need to close your ears. Here it comes. We wouldn't want sensitive young ears to hear these things. They quote the scripture like this, and they add one word. To bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown in order to display her naked beauty to the people and the princes, for she was beautiful. Okay. Mental picture. One, the queen to come in wearing just her crown. And the crown wasn't covering anything else but her head. You follow it? I'm not sure that that's the problem, though, and here's the reason why I'm not sure that's the problem. I think there's a different reason. The probable reason is because history tells us some other things. It is 483 B.C. You see it on the board. Who is born in 483 B.C.? She's pregnant. He will be born after mother is banished from the kingdom. Artaxerxes I is going to be born after the feast is over with. She is round yon virgin, mother with child, but not a virgin. Okay, got it? It's almost the Christmas season. We can almost say that, can't? Okay. She's not a virgin, but she is with child. Custom of those days, a pregnant woman could be in the presence of other women, but never in the presence of any man except for her husband. So for the king to get drunker than a skunk, can I say drunker than a skunk? I've already asked you that. And say, come wearing your crown to show your beauty, just did not go with the customs of the day because it was forbidden. Whether she was covered or not as a pregnant woman, customs did not allow it. Now, I'm going to be real biased with y'all right now. You can throw up all the most beautiful women in the world in pictures or in front of me as all you want. But if there's one pregnant woman in the room with all the other 999 beautiful women, to me, the most beautiful woman in the world, no matter what she looks like, is the pregnant woman. It is just something about them having a child growing and the miracle of God that is happening. Every pregnant woman I see, even though she's sitting there with a hand on her back, oh, I can't make it anymore. Just beautiful. Just beautiful. And I'm sure Xerxes was proud of, not only was she beautiful, but she was also probably, we don't know for sure. We'll find that out when we all get to heaven carrying a child. Well, she has refused to come. She has disobeyed the king's order. Then the king said to the wise men who understood the times, in other words, they were the wise men who knew the laws of the day. And it was the custom of the king, so to speak, before all who knew the laws and justice and who were close to him. So there's seven guys who are very close to him. Here they are, their names. Names don't really mean anything to us. Karshina, Sephthara, Admatha, Tarshish, Merez, Marcena, and Memucan. The seven princesses of Persia and Media who had access to the king's presence and sat in the first place in the kingdom. In other words, if the king came out and had a thought, he would say to one of these seven guys, this is what I want to do right now. Let's do it. Get it done. These are the seven guys. These are the seven princesses. These are the seven closest men that always can be in the presence of the king just about any time. Where the wives couldn't, but these men could. According to the law, he asked, what is to be done with Queen Vashti because she did not obey King Ahasuerus' command that was delivered by the eunuchs? What are we going to do with her? You have to remember, Xerxes is still drunk. He's been disobeyed by his beautiful wife. It's a dilemma. What do we do? What are these seven legal guys going to come up with? And I feel pretty sure they got their heads together, and one of them turned, Mimikin turned around to Xerxes and said this. And in the presence of the king and the princes, Mimikin said, Queen Vashti has wronged not only the king, but also all the princesses and all the peoples who are in the provinces of King Ahasuerus. For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, causing them to look with contempt on their husbands by saying, King Ahasuerus commanded the queen Vashti to be brought into his presence, but she did not come. And you know how they know that? Because all the wives are over in the other room inside the palace. They already know what she did. And this day, the ladies of Persia and Media, yeah, this day is correct because it's already happened. Every woman over in the palace knows what's going on. Who have heard of the queen's conduct will speak in the same way to all the king's princesses, and there will be plenty of contempt and anger. Let me translate that for you. King, your wife has just caused a mess for the rest of the entire kingdom. Every single man out there who thought he was in charge of his household just got put down. Every single wife out there is going to say, Queen didn't do it, so I'm not going to do it for you. Nanny, nanny, boo, boo. You want beans, rice, and taco? I don't feel like it today. You go do it yourself. It ain't going to happen. You want what and you want where? You didn't even pick up your socks this morning. I'm not going to do that. If you want your socks clean, go put them in front of the washing machine. Then they'll miraculously end up back in your drawer. Like a miracle. Caused a problem. If it pleases the king, let a royal edict be issued by him, and let it be written in the law of the Persians and the Media, so that it cannot be repealed, that Vashti should come never again or no more into the presence of King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal position to another who is more worthy than she. And when the king's edict, which he shall make, is heard throughout all his kingdom, great as it is, then all the women will give honor to their husbands, great and small. Mimikin already knows he's got a problem. Guys, this is where it all started. Girls, just shut your ears. Well, guys, back in those days, the husband was the head of the house, and what he said was law. It doesn't work that way in most of America anymore. And I wouldn't want the women sitting beside you to know that. But it worked that way back in these days. For Queen Vashti to disobey her husband by not coming in with her crown on and showing her beauty made him furious, and he blew his top. Of course, he was also drunk. And so this suggestion is made for the edict to be placed out there so that all the women will know their place. Verse 21. And this word pleased the king and the princes, and the king did as Mimikin proposed. So he sent letters to all the king's provinces, to each province according to its script or its writing, and to every people according to their language, that every man should be the master to his own house, and that one who speaks in the language of his own people. In other words, we're going to send out this edict, and we're going to get rid of that woman, my wife, and we're going to put the threat out there that if any other woman does the same thing to her husband, the same penalty will be done, for the man is the master of his own house. So the king, in his drunken stupor, allows it to happen. He shouldn't have had the seventh day of the banquet because he's drunk, and he's mad, and he's angry. So the decree is written in Ethiopian. It's written in Egyptian, or whatever the language they were using at the time. You know, Egyptians, you're not quite sure what language they're using because it changed quite often. Well, at least four times. Went over to Asia Minor. In whatever the languages are there, up in Syria, it's in Syrian. Over towards India, it's in the Indian language, whichever one it happened to be, and what areas it was sent to. Through the Persian people, whatever language. Through the Chaldean people, whatever language. So everybody got the letter. Everybody got the edict and decree. It was sent out through all 127 provinces so that everyone knew what Queen Vashti has done, and it could not be stood for. And that Queen Vashti was going to lose her position. It's interesting because she doesn't get the death penalty. Why does she not get the death penalty, which she should have gotten for disobeying the king? Because she's got a child on the way. Now I'm wondering, did Xerxes ever see Vashti again? She was never to come in his presence again. I wonder how they did that first and third of every month whenever he gets the child for every weekend, you know, that. And then in July, you understand what we're talking about? Yeah, it's funny to me because everybody in the world, whenever there's a divorce, they say, okay, I get the children first and third, and that's what my lawyer got for me at the court. And I'm sitting here going, your lawyer did got that for you. Yeah. These lawyers must have gotten together because they're all getting the same thing for everybody. It's the standard decree is all it is, just the standard decree. And if you don't notify your ex-partner by April the 1st or April the 15th that you want to change the month of July to be some other time, it's just tough luck, whatever the date is. Anyway, I wonder how much the king interacted because his son, Artaxerxes, that's going to be born to Vashti, Armistice is his mother, is going to be involved because he's going to take over the king's place. We'll see that as we get on down through the stories and see exactly what happened. Well, that's the end of chapter 1, and I cannot leave you there, because really chapter 2's got a bad chapter break. Look what chapter 2, verse 1 says. After these things, when the anger of King Ahasuerus had subsided, guess who he thought about? He remembered Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. In other words, just in plain everyday language, Xerxes regretted what had happened. Regretted. But he cannot change the law of the Medes and Persians because it was done in such a way that he was never to see Vashti again. The beauty of his life because of the stupid thing that he did in his drunken stupor on the last day of a banquet when he was merry with wine. Perhaps in the drunken stupor on the seventh day of the banquet, Xerxes ordered Vashti to go against the customs of the day. Perhaps in his fury, Xerxes ordered an edict that he now regrets. Perhaps he remembers Vashti's beauty and wishes to reclaim her, but he cannot do so because of the law of the Medes and the Persians. Xerxes cannot change the consequences of the edict upon Vashti or himself. No one knows the true meaning behind the verse, but its words lead the reader to understand that Xerxes replays the event in his head and he tells someone about it enough times that the king's attendants will attempt to turn his attention from Vashti to another woman in the next passage. That's where we'll pick up next time when we join together with that next passage where we find him searching for someone to take the place of Vashti.